you once again for tuning into the Psychedelic Podcast. I'm your host, Tina Marie, here with my husband, Rob. And today we are on part three of our series on narcissism. Before we get started, I'd like to give a huge shout out to our broadcasting network, 365 Broadcasting, our sponsor, Artie Hoffman. His link will be in the description.
Also, be sure to get your free audiobook from audibletrial.com/psychedelic, no hyphen there.
We are currently reading Deepak Chopra's 7 Spiritual Laws to Success.
Yeah, it's very short. It's just under 100 pages, I think. It's pretty much like a one-day read.
But the great thing about Audible is they read it for you.
Exactly. I believe that this part 3 should wrap up our narcissism series. There's a lot of other really heavy-hitting topics that need to be addressed, but I think this should cover everything and answer a lot of the questions that we had in parts 1 and 2, because we are not experts and we don't have all the answers.
Thank you for saying that, because I was totally going to forget to say we are not experts, guys. We are your favorite panel of non-experts.
It's got to be reiterated.
For sure. We are definitely not psychotherapists, psychiatrists, psychologists, any of that, but we do love these subjects of these topics.
Not even close. But I do think that we're the most qualified, unqualified people you'll find.
I completely agree. To start things out...
Not to be a narcissist.
Okay, let's go back and forth. So we're going to read to you the 12 weird things that you might see a narcissist do.
So number one, we have they don't blink when they stare at you, and they have sort of this predatory gaze that might make you want to squirm out of your boots.
Squirm out of your boots. That's funny. That reminds me of when we first started dating and I said, if somebody doesn't yawn back, they're a psychopath. So psychopaths actually don't have that instinct to yawn. It's kind of an empathetic thing to do when somebody else yawns. You also yawn. You are feeling how tired they are.
So if you don't have that empathy to feel someone else's fatigue as they yawn, you don't yawn back. Does that make you have NPD?
No, not at all. That's something we also want to reiterate.
Well, that means you don't have empathy, so that could lead to making the assumption that you do have NPD or something more serious.
I would say that it might be one of the attributes that a narcissist has that you also share, but it doesn't quite make you a narcissist, and we'll get more into that. You can also look back to episode 1 to see what exactly makes somebody that's a narcissist different than somebody that has narcissistic personality disorder.
So people that do have empathy, are they going to yawn every single time that they witness another person yawn?
Not at all.
Okay.
I think it's really contingent on what that person is going through at the time. Mm. It's a lot harder, in my opinion, for somebody that is going through some kind of internal struggle to feel empathetic for someone going through something they believe is much less than what they're dealing with.
Okay.
Number 2, they interrupt you and only care about what they're going to say next.
I do this sometimes, but it's more just about me not realizing what I'm doing. But once it's brought to my attention, I can make that adjustment and stop interrupting people.
What's interesting is a lot of people need a second person's opinion, or a third person's even sometimes, right? I mean, Yeah. You, me, anybody really, to really notice that they're doing something or not doing something that they feel should be
implicated, expressed.
Thank you, honey. I love that. One of those words. So
you almost make me want to interrupt you.
Don't do that. No, playing. But okay. As we go into this list, we want to make sure you know that if you hear that you have one of these traits, you are not a narcissist. Well, you might be, but I think everybody has narcissistic tendencies.
Yeah. And let's not get number 2 confused with being compassionate. A lot of times people are waiting to talk because they feel like they have the right words at that time to help that person. And that is completely the opposite of being narcissistic. But if there's a certain pattern and it's not really talking about a problem that needs to be addressed. You're just cutting people off in trivial conversation, and it's a lot different.
I completely agree with that. Moving on to number three, even if you tell them something about yourself, they always relate it back to them somehow. And guess what? There are so many people in the world that do this. But once again, it does not make you a full-blown narcissist. NPD and narcissism are two completely different things.
Did you not say in part two that we're all a narcissist?
Yes, that's what I just said just now too.
So if we're already all narcissists, then what's the point in stating whether or not we're... Like, if somebody has this whole list, how do they not have NPD? If people do this frequently.
Well, because this is 12 weird things you might see a narcissist do. And a lot of narcissists are very intelligent.
I feel like we've gone over this so many times, but I think it officially has sunk in. So I will not ask that question anymore. So number four... And again, this is a list of 12 things. Their eyes can look flat or dead.
I say this a lot about a few people I know. I had an ex that I've told you about multiple times where my mom warned me. His eyes look dead. He looks like a psychopath. I didn't listen to her. And look where he is now. You guys don't get to know this about me unless you become a patron on our Patreon. And then if you do, I will probably tell the story.
Yes, learn about Tina's crazy ex, be a patron. Once this was brought to my attention about the dead look in the eyes from having a lot of conversations with you, and I don't watch the news a lot, but I look for a glimmer in politicians' eyes to see if they're a sociopath or not. I mean, if they have no... glimmer in their eyes, you automatically know that they're probably lying to you and they're not a sincere politician.
Right. And I don't understand people that think that somebody with a true charisma can have this dead look in their eyes. Somebody that is full of charisma and joy and life and hope and love.
You have no soul.
No. Someone that has these things.
No, I'm saying the eyes are the reflection of the soul.
Oh,
correct?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So if you have no shine, then you pretty much have no soul, or you've cut yourself off from acknowledging its existence.
On the other hand, it doesn't mean you're a narcissist. A lot of people with dead eyes could be dealing with depression or severe anxiety. And so to us, if you don't have those issues, you might see them as dead eyes, but it doesn't mean they're a narcissist. It means they might be going through something that you don't understand, and they're not always like that, and they could probably easily bring it back, and they just need to get through what they're going through.
Very true. But if you're a politician and you consistently get up on that podium and they actually have charisma and they have no shine in their eyes, that's how you know that they're fake and they're probably not depressed. They probably have some of these crazy traits.
I completely agree.
Or disorders that we're talking about.
Yeah, so the eyes look flat or dead. So moving on to number five, they sometimes display psychotic behavior that's their mask of sanity coming off. When you think of psychotic behavior, what do you think of, Rob?
I think of having outbursts, fits of rage, and episodes of explosive behavior that is completely unexpected to other people, but it may make sense to that person. That's my best way of explaining it.
That's a good way of explaining it. And this is all about philosophy here, so take it however you want. Moving on to number six.
Having dramatic and inexplicable mood swings. I think that's pretty much everybody, but...
I don't think so.
Well, not always dramatic. We all have mood swings sometimes. That's just being a human. Having this duality of good, evil, happiness, sadness within us all the time, especially in the world that we live in today. It's fair to say that we all have mood swings, but dramatic and inexplicable really stand out to me.
Yeah.
Shocking, the shock and awe factor, like we were just talking about having a really explosive episode.
Right. And this one is very hard to gauge, and I don't completely agree that this should be on the list of narcissists and what they do, because you don't know what somebody else is going through of why they might be having a mood swing of some sort. You don't know what might have triggered them to feel that way, and you can never really fully understand how somebody is feeling. That's the thing about this. Somebody might have a mood swing, and to you, it's inexplicable or dramatic. That's
Good point.
Yeah, to them, if you don't know what's happening in their life, you can't really tell them or define that as inexplicable. To them, it means something.
I think it's more so if you live with somebody and you're around this person to the point where it doesn't make any sense to you. You're around them enough to see that all of the events leading up to their swing and behavior does not add up. You've been there for all of the rising actions before the climax and it doesn't make sense, then that's different. But, and again, there's no way to really know what that person is going through, even if you are present and around them for a lot of the things leading up to it.
Right. And that's why this is 12 weird things you might see a narcissist do.
Exactly. Yeah. Number 7, they're bad at sports and they act like babies if they lose. This is the one that I probably hate the most in people.
Yeah.
See, I hate it when it's not even a situation where there needs to be a winner and or loser. It's like, bro, you're the only one that's competing right now. So stop acting like you lost.
Yeah.
It's a pissing competition. Like, I'm not always trying to make everything a competition. Sometimes. But most of the time, I'm like, this is trivial. Let's all get along here. Like, let's not act like babies.
Yeah.
And we have to be better than somebody all the time. I don't know. It's so annoying that everybody has to have such this egocentric outlook towards every situation. That's how you win. You're supposed to lose a lot. If you don't experience losing, then you don't know what it feels like to be a winner. And you have to go through those losses in order to become better, obviously, and to make yourself a winner in sports,
life,
business,
period.
In anything.
They do that a lot in the podcasting world, guys. If you're a listener and you're listening to this right now, there are a lot of bad sports out there in our podcasting world, and this happens quite frequently.
I want to loosely quote Joe Rogan. Probably never do it again. Not that I dislike him, just because it's...
Go for it.
He's a big podcast guy, and it's kind of stupid to quote him, but I really did like what he said one time. He said, as children, we hold these high standards to adults. We trust them with everything. We have complete faith that everything that they do is always correct. When you grow up and you become adult yourself, you realize that everybody's just a grown-ass kid and don't know what the F's going on.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I thought that was a very good way to put that. That hit home for me because that's so true.
Number 8, something that I don't particularly agree with either. They have dark interests, mass murder, things that generally make people feel uncomfortable. Not everyone can agree with this. A lot of people are very into true crime and things of that nature, and there is nothing wrong with that. It's really contingent on what your use for that knowledge is.
Like you always say, what is it? A morbid curiosity. Like, you can be a very spiritual, giving, empathetic, and compassionate person and watch true crime things. If somebody was a narcissist, this is probably something they would be doing, though.
Yes, this might be something that they're very interested in. So, moving on to number 9. They can't let nature take its own course. They live in the mortal fear of aging.
That to me sounds like somebody having no faith and no real belief in anything other than this life and this physical realm. Not being able to get over the fact that we're not immortal. Everything in life is ever changing. We're not ceaseless. We are going to pass away at some point, whether you believe it's heaven, whether you believe it's reincarnation, whatever. People can't get over the hump of this physical world. They can't be at peace with it.
Okay, so since we're talking about what we might see a narcissist do, and this is no bashing to anybody that does this, But a lot of elderly women that get a lot of work done on their faces and stuff, they don't want to come to terms with the fact that they're aging and embrace it in the way that they probably should. You're not ageless, you're not dateless, you're not immortal. Why stop the way that the progression of age truly is? It is what it is. Deal with it. Love your life. Live it to the best of your ability.
That's a good example. Yeah, we are all imperishable. To not be able to come to terms with that, even though it's a hard pill to swallow, how do you not have the coping skills to get over something that you literally can't change ever? You never will be able to change. Well, I mean, technology is endless, and I'm sure there's a way to achieve immortality, but the average person, just be at peace with the fact that we're all going to die one day. However you do that, you have to. You have to be able to live, to be able to move on.
You don't fear age. Age is but a number. So many people say that, and it's like, half of the people saying it really believe it. The other half, they're faking it until they make it, and that is completely fine. That proves you're not a narcissist. If you believe you're scared of becoming older, there's nothing wrong with that. If you are trying to be the best person you can be today is all that really matters.
Also, on the other end of the spectrum, I feel like people are really passive. They're just letting all this time going by, but they're not really doing anything of substance. It's kind of like, oh, there's another World Series in the book. The Cardinals won that one.
another year gone by.
Yeah, another year gone by. They just take the back seat in life. Kind of just go through it in a haze, not really
scroll through their phone,
just unconsciously. In sort of a fog, and they're not really putting themselves into this experience, and they're not taking control of their lives. They're just kind of smoking weed and getting on Facebook and just letting everything pass them by.
Not that there's anything wrong with smoking weed or anything. I'm neither here nor there.
There's nothing wrong with that. That was just something that can contribute to you being in a fog.
Yeah, absolutely. Long term. I agree. Bringing us to number 10. They have an affected way of speaking, often adopting a fake foreign accent. And I've seen this a lot having lived across the world. A lot of Americans that I knew when I lived in Korea kind of had this contingency to have a little bit of a Korean accent or adopt certain words or phrases or certain ways of speaking that made them sound more Korean. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Example. I haven't really seen that much in my life. I mean, I lived in England. I lived on an American base. There was one kid that was British, but nobody really tried to copy him. But we were young, you know, so we didn't have the ability to become full-blown narcissists yet.
That's
but
all right.
I
mean, we could, if we went to any other country, could probably pick up on any accent pretty well and take it as our own. But it really depends on the age, right?
You could probably do it, but I mean, I wouldn't speak it as my primary language.
Right.
That was horrid.
No, that was actually perfect. And you don't take this accent and make it your own and go with it, roll with it for the rest of your life, make it who you are. You have the life of the party.
It would just feel unsettling, really, to fake who you are in such a massive way.
Yes.
And I couldn't do it.
No, it would be so draining.
I would be depleted.
Depleted, yes, that is the word.
Moving on.
Yes.
Using exaggerated mannerisms, facial expressions, or speaking voice, kind of like we just did.
Well, here's the thing. As an actor, I can tell you I use a lot of exaggerated mannerisms, and they are learned. I can't help it. It's a part of my personality, and that's just me.
Yeah.
But
you're not claiming to be the role in which you're acting for. You are trying to do a good job in a profession.
Right. And I think a lot of us do over-exaggerate. But the problem with, I think, a lot of the world is that they under-exaggerate. Where are their personalities these days? Maybe they want everybody to think they're a narcissist. And maybe there's some stigmas attached to what a narcissist is. As an actor myself, I'm very expressive. I make a lot of hand gestures, and I feel like it's uncontrollable. I cannot help it.
Yeah, I'm sort of the same way. I know I make a lot of facial expressions, but I don't do it intentionally, and I don't realize it until I watch myself on a video later. I'm just like, oh, my face does all that stuff, and I don't even realize it, but I know I'm Italian, but I don't really have the hand gestures.
Don't lie to yourself. You really? Make the hand gestures.
Really?
It's you got it backwards. You are less of a face, more of a hand.
Interesting.
I do both, and I know this, and I don't notice till later if I watch a video of myself where I'm like, wow, did I really make all of those hand gestures? Here's the interesting thing about hand gestures. They're very important in
with confidence,
with charisma, with being able to relate to. Hand gestures mm-hmm. are really important.
Everything like that, because in certain situations in schooling, I remember learning about active listening and things like that, and showing that you're listening to somebody and absorbing the information that they're telling you. Body language is really important. And also to kind of parallel that, in order to convey an idea properly and have confidence and make people have the confidence in you that what you're saying
is true,
is true, or they can trust you, mm-hmm. you do have to use a lot of body language and hand gestures. You can't just be up there with fish hands, your dead fish hands, and just be shrugging your shoulders and stuff. Like, you got to throw your hands up there, and it can really articulate a lot of things that you can't articulate verbally.
Well, some people just do it naturally. Maybe people that have NPD do it on purpose. I don't know. But I know that I personally do it without knowing.
Yeah, same here. I think with people with NPD, it's more of a conscious thing. Like, they're really trying to manipulate people. So
I agree.
They're actively thinking about how their face, their hand gestures look, and faking the way you talk. I think is rather strange.
Yeah.
I don't know many people like that. Or maybe...
We don't know. We won't know.
We wouldn't be able to know.
Exactly. Oh, number 12. They have conversations with themselves.
I was going to say, I don't really know many people like this, but I'm sure they often do it behind closed doors.
I have seen a lot of statuses and memes about talking to yourself. There is nothing wrong with this. I don't personally do it. Unless I'm like mid-argument with somebody, I will probably, and I'm going to be completely honest here, I will passive-aggressively talk to myself, knowing that person can hear it. So I am aware that I'm having a quote-unquote conversation with myself. But apparently a lot of narcissists do this on their own as well.
I usually do it when I'm mad. But
in front of someone, though?
Never in front of someone.
Really?
Well, maybe if I'm mad, I'm saying something to myself what I shouldn't say to another person, but I purposely let them hear me. And I'm just like, oh, nothing. Like, I'm just talking to myself, which is kind of manipulative, but yeah.
Well, an extreme case of having a conversation with yourself, which we have read from themindsjournal.com, is that somebody's ex used to do this a lot, and they would do it in front of a mirror. I have personally never done this.
I couldn't. That's uncomfortable for me. I couldn't just sit there and talk to myself. And
I've never done that.
And giving yourself a little positive pep talk is perfectly okay.
I've never seen that either.
But I mean, if you're sadistically cursing somebody, like putting a hex on them,
weird.
Yeah, that's kind of screwed up.
You think somebody does that?
I don't know anybody that does that, but that's what I'm saying. Like, we probably wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people do that.
I'd love if you are a narcissist or think that you are, to send us a message and let us know, because we'd love to talk to you.
Like, episode 1, we're still waiting on narcissists to reach out to us and kind of let us know how you think, so we can maybe get some more answers to these questions that we have. Moving on to myths and facts of narcissism and NPD, to kind of wrap up this whole mini-series. This, I feel like, will definitely answer a lot of questions that we have.
Yeah, let's go to the number one myth. Narcissism is inherently unhealthy and problematic, but the fact is, like many things in life, it occurs on a spectrum ranging from healthy to pretty much unhealthy or pathological, as we have spoken about, pathological being one of the two that is listed in the DSM-5.
So is that kind of seeing yourself through, I was going to say beer goggles. Now, tinted glasses, or what do they call it? Rose-colored glasses, to where you see yourself in a better light than maybe you deserve. But it can be kind of a self-compassion thing.
Like a lot of people do in early relationships where they see their partner with rose-colored glasses, meaning they don't see any of the bad attributes of their partner. They only see the best of them, forgetting everything around them that might be negative or toxic.
But apparently, if you make that slight adjustment into seeing yourself in a better light, it's healthy narcissism. So it's not inherently all unhealthy and problematic.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. So it really becomes a problem when somebody's really completely preoccupied with themselves and they need excessive admiration or praise from anybody else, whether it be their family or their partner. It doesn't matter where it comes from. They need that excessive admiration. They have a disregard to other people's feelings or vulnerabilities. They tend to take in the information of somebody else, suck it into themselves, and make it about themselves, which we talked about within this episode. They turn the conversation around unto themselves.
Right. So this way of looking at it allows you to dream big, but not at the expense of others and other important relationships, like your significant other and other family members. You don't want your girlfriend to be a family member.
Unless you want to marry them.
Exactly. So number two, narcissists feel the same range of emotions that people who aren't narcissists do. That's pretty obvious. They sort of have a empathetic deficiency.
Yeah, they have a deficiency with feeling empathy, and not in all of cases is this really fair to the narcissist.
That's a pretty obvious one. I think we got that one down.
Number three, true narcissists are born, not made that way.
You are not born a narcissist, so that clears that question up. I can kind of see how this could be truth.
From my research, I know that narcissists, yes, they're not born, and well, the myth is that true narcissists are born, not made that way. But the truth to me is that they have a specific hereditary gene in some cases, because scientific studies have proven that they might be more inclined to getting narcissistic personality disorder contingent on their genes.
So it's sort of something that in their personality, in the genetics of their parents' personalities, that they picked up that's more so going to lead you down the narcissistic path.
Right.
You're not born with NPD directly, but you have some questionable personality elements and the environment that you grow up in mixed in with that could lead somebody down the path of narcissism much easier than somebody that was born without questionable, more positive traits in a more positive environment.
Yeah, and while there is that genetic component to narcissism, it's quite moderate. As we said in part one, a lot of it is hereditary. There has been scientific studies. It can be hereditary. It does not mean you're a narcissist, even if your parents were and you're well aware of that. So
you just can, tendencies,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can have the tendencies.
Not the disorder.
The 23 to 35% is hereditary. And that is just if you get that. And that's not everybody. So a lot of people that are adopted and whatnot come from families that might have had NPD in their bloodline. You don't have a huge chance. It's moderate, but you don't have a huge chance of getting this trait.
Children that grow up that experience, I guess, like cold-shouldered parenting techniques, there's really no sense of attachment to their caregiver, are more likely to develop narcissism. But when parents go to great lengths to build their child's self-esteem, kind of like I said in the last episode,
yeah,
constantly telling them that they have talent, they're loved, they're beautiful.
It can backfire.
Right. Have more. There has to be a balance, right?
Right.
So doing this too much can bring out that grandiose sense of self, that overinflated ego, which can also lead to narcissism. So you just have to have a balance in your parenting techniques. You can't be too warm. You can't be too cold. You just have to find that middle ground. And that's the best that you can do.
It can create a narcissist, or at least, just like all of us have, give us some narcissistic tendencies. And it's never really the parent's fault. It's never the person's fault. The environment has a lot in play with that as well. The places that the person goes has a lot to do with it. The people that they meet has a lot to do with it. Who they surround themselves with, it, experiencing at young ages, like their most important years of growth as a human, where their amygdala is not fully formed, has a lot to do with the feelings of entitlement or empathy, which, you know, entitlement is not generally a positive thing to have, and empathy is a very good thing to have.
Yes, so in those golden years of growing up, when parents are the most important people of their life and you hold their opinions to be of the utmost importance over anybody else or your siblings, narcissists that have this grandiose sense of self, as a child, they kind of internalized this inflated view that their parents had of them. I mean, that's not really their fault a lot of times.
Not at all.
You know, that's their identity. The fourth one is people with NPD believe that they are better than others. Not always. A lot of times people with NPD are this way because of traumas. So underneath all of this grandiose sense of self can be a lot of insecurities, abandonment issues, rejection issues. Mm-hmm. They have a hard time having attachments with people because they were abandoned.
That makes them feel like they have a lack of empathy because they have that difficulty attaching to other people. And so they don't understand people in the way that the general population would understand another person. Right. And unfortunately, even these days, a lot of people cannot have that type of attachment to others because we are so disconnected from the rest of the world that everybody pretty much seems like a narcissist these days.
Right. It's a facade. It's smoke and mirrors, smoke screen. They may externalize this sense that they feel like they're better than others, but a lot of the times it's actually quite the opposite.
Yeah, it's pretty much a survival instinct for a lot of kids that have been emotionally, physically, or sexually abused, in which they develop this personality disorder because of those things and because of the PTSD, like you're talking about, where they develop a narcissistic trait because they were neglected in one form or another, in which they felt that they had to overcompensate in a lot of ways. And so they portray this vision of being better or more grandiose and being very, very important, having to have those Instagram posts that are just better than everybody else's. But really, in truth, you are being narcissistic.
Number five, and to wrap up this whole mini series, I think this is extremely appropriate. Pathological narcissism cannot be overcome.
Myth.
That is a myth. And this is one of the big questions that I had. It can be overcome, but that person cannot be in denial. They need to want to change and be willing to do the hard work that is required to do that.
I have had some narcissists reach out to me after hearing part one and two of our series.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they actually have told me that they are doing their very, very best to be a better person. They have realized that they have narcissistic tendency. A lot of them having come from backgrounds like being adopted or having some type of abuse in their life.
I forgot that people did actually reach out, but they were a very conscious narcissist. May not have been at all. They may have just thought that they were. But even if they were, they were very conscious of their behaviors and they were acknowledging the ways in which they thought they were narcissists and wanted to change. So that was interesting. But we have yet to have the pompous, grandiose narcissist hit us up and be like, yeah, I'm a narcissist. Let me get on the show.
We would never know if they were really that, because the problem with NPD is the fact that we don't know if they're a covert or overt type of narcissist. We've met some and that we have kind of pointed out and unfairly described them as a covert or overt narcissist and tried to pick it apart, because that's what we do here, is we like to delve into the human mind. And no, none of our friends are experiments to us, but we do realize certain things.
Yeah, and I'm very quick to label on these narcissism episodes, but I need to realize that all these connections I'm making in my head is not always the right answer, and it does take another person or a whole panel's worth of perspectives to really get the bigger picture, because I'm just like, something pops in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, you might be a narcissist if, and then somebody's like, right. Well, hold on, they display this, 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 and this, but it could be this. And that's why psychology is so wonderful.
Often narcissists have little to no insight on knowing that they're a narcissist. I mean, people don't, they're not going to outwardly tell you, hey, you're acting like a narcissist, because I mean, look at the world we live in. It's 2020. Everybody on social media appears to be that way. And they often will not seek treatment or help. Engage. They often engage in things like 12-step programs like they do with NA or AA. And they don't like to seek treatment in a psychotherapy type of situation, when really they should. I mean, you have to tell the person or the narcissist in your life that you actually care about that they need help. And if they don't take that help, it's really on them.
Yeah, you can't come at them in an aggressive way. The only way that somebody, narcissist or not, is gonna respond to aggression is with more aggression. So that's never the answer. If you really do care about this person and you really do have empathy and compassion for them and you want them to seek treatment for this disorder so that they can come clean with themselves, help themselves and everybody that they love and care for around them, you should really come from a wholehearted place with narcissists, with people who have NPD, and with life in general. So I think that we've said more than enough about this topic. I'm glad to close the book on this one. What are your thoughts on what we should do next for our little series topics?
That's what I was about to ask everybody. What do you think we should do for our next mini series on any of these type of psychology topics? I'm thinking maybe sociopaths. I'm not sure. It's all about you guys. So let us know. Join our Patreon, which is patreon.com/psychedelicpodcast. There is no hyphen there, and that will be in the description. The more you guys become our patrons, the more stuff we will put out for you.
Absolutely. And shout out to 365 Broadcasting. That's the amazing network that we're a part of. Also, if you want to kind of follow what we're doing, Tina came up with the idea to do an indie podcast convention. It's called Indie Pods United. Be on the lookout for a lot of things in the works with that. We plan to do the convention November 29th through to be determined.
Definitely. So follow us on Facebook. All of the links are in the description. Thank you to our sponsor, Artie Hoffman. And if you want a free audiobook, please visit audibletrial.com/psychedelic. No hyphen there either.
Be on the lookout for our two next, well, the next one will be a semi-panel discussion with Dawn. It's going to be about cancel culture. And the next one after that is going to be a pretty big episode. It's going to be with the full panel, and that topic is going to be cults.
Cults. Who doesn't like learning about cults?
I'm really excited for that one.
So am I. So look forward to those two new episodes. We will catch you on the flip.
Peace.
Peeves.